Welcome to the Ask the Experts podcast. Here's Karan Bhatia.
I am Karan Bhatia, joined by Eric Raskin. We're going to be breaking down the Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia fight. It was shocking. It was epic. There's some betting involved, which we need to talk about. But first of all, Eric, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Karan?
Doing good, man. I think we're all still taking it in, that amazing fight that I think shocked so many people. And maybe it shocked people because Ryan Garcia wanted us to be shocked. And you know, whether it was trolling or not, and we saw what happened. It was shocking. Ryan Garcia knocking down Devin Haney three times that were actually counted as official knockdowns, we should say. And, right. You know, winning that fight, incredible. So I want to talk about, because there were reports that Ryan Garcia also bet on himself because he was an underdog going into this fight. And I want to ask you about that. But before I do, just give me your thoughts looking back at this fight. I mean, Devin Haney coming into this performance was undefeated. Very rarely have we seen him hurt. We obviously haven't seen him lose in the ring. And Ryan Garcia was very erratic behavior, you could call it. So seeing what we saw was shocking. What were your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I certainly did not see that outcome coming. It's interesting in that when the fight was first announced, my initial thought was, okay, but that's a pretty good fight. Yeah, Devin Haney's got to be the clear favorite, but I give Ryan Garcia a chance. He's a dangerous puncher. He's quick. He's athletic. He's got a shot here. This looks competitive, but we have a clear favorite and a clear underdog. And then once the promotion got underway and we started seeing Garcia's erratic behavior and he's posting social media clips of himself doing things a fighter is not supposed to do in training camp, and we're getting closer, and then he doesn't even make an attempt to make weight, really. It came in 3.2 pounds over and made no effort to get all the way down. By that point, as this was all going on, I switched from competitive fight with clear favorite and an underdog to fight I cannot see the underdog winning. So if this was a giant troll job by Ryan Garcia, which I do not believe it was, but just if we're operating under that hypothetical, it worked. In the sense that he threw me completely off the scent of the chance that he had in this fight. Maybe he threw Devin Haney off the scent of the chance that he had in this fight, and Haney took him a little lightly. Clearly, he did not prepare for the left hook the way that he should have. So, I was certainly shocked. It was one of those things where the first half of the fight was not surprising at all. Even the first round, which Garcia clearly won, and he rocked Haney a bit. That was all within the bounds of what we could have seen happening, that if you're a little overweight, maybe you're not in the shape you need to be in, you're going to come out fast, go for that knockout. And then Haney settled down and was outboxing him comfortably. But from round seven on, my jaw hit the floor a few times. This was not what I saw coming.
It's interesting because in a way that was similar to the Tank fight. Ryan, he's the round one in Tank fight, he fought a smart fight, and Joe Goosen said, you're doing a good job. And then round two is when he just turned it on, and mm-hmm. that ended up not working out for him. But it seemed like in this fight, we saw in round one, he landed the left hook. You mentioned Haney maybe didn't prepare for it, or it's just possible that it's the kind of punch, like, you know, Wilder's right hand or other punches that we've seen so many times in boxing where you can prepare for it, but it's so quick, it's so powerful that it's like, you know, Mariano Rivera's cutter or something. Like, even if you prepare for it, you can't necessarily handle it. And maybe that was the case there. It's just such a great punch to have in your bag. It was interesting though, because you mentioned that you don't necessarily think it was a troll job coming into this fight. But in a way that it just has to play a factor for Devin Haney in his mind to not take it as seriously, because you see this guy doing all of these antics. And in a way, it's almost like playing possum. And then in the fight itself, there was ebbs and flows. And I think Teddy Atlas made this point, I'm sure others did too, that in a way, those ebbs and flows also were actually benefiting Ryan Garcia, because Devin Haney might see the ebbs and flows of Ryan, for example, he has the first round, but then he's not throwing as much in middle rounds, and then boom, the left hook, and he's knocked down again. Haney is. And so it's almost like playing possum in beforehand and in the fight. So it's really fascinating and interesting. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned you didn't feel like it was necessarily trolling in terms of Ryan's behavior before the fight. So with that said, what do you think it was? Because we know that Ryan Garcia has been, you know, vocal about mental health challenges, and I applaud him for doing so. I think more fighters need to do that and take a break, or if you need to sit out and do what you need to do to get yourself in a better place. I think that's great, and I think that's, you know, you're being a role model in a way to people watching and saying, hey, I can take a break because of mental health. And I think that's great that he does that. But in terms of the erratic behavior, were we witnessing, if it wasn't trolling in your mind, do you think we were witnessing mental health, you know, struggles playing out in real time on social media there?
That's what it seemed like to me. And I'm not an expert in that regard, but you know, I host the Interim Champion Boxing Podcast with Kieran Mulvaney, and he has been open as someone who has his own mental health struggles, and he has a little more expertise in this area than I do. And his assessment, particularly during the post-fight interview after Ryan won, Kieran and I were trading some DM messages about the way that Garcia was behaving, and I was finding it very off-putting and annoying. And I was kind of like, although I guess if it's a mental health thing, I shouldn't be so critical. And Kieran said, yeah, this strikes me as a guy who's going through a manic episode. Now, again, not a doctor's assessment, just Kieran making an observation, but that's kind of how it seems to me, that he is having mental health struggles. Whether he should be on medication and is not on that medication currently, I can't assess that, but just from where I'm sitting, it did not seem like just an acting job. I think it also, let's be clear that it doesn't have to be 100% one thing or 100% another. It could be that he is having mental health struggles, but also at certain points decided to play them up for effect. There can be some combination of both going on here, but yeah, I think there are some serious issues at play here. And I certainly don't believe that this was all an act designed to hype up the fight, because I think it had the opposite effect from a sales perspective. Now, we haven't heard the sales numbers yet, but we know ticket sales were kind of soft in Brooklyn that leading up to the fight. And I just heard anecdotally from a lot of people who I would have been interested in this fight, but now it seems like a mismatch. Ryan Garcia isn't right. I don't feel comfortable watching this. I'm not going to order it. I think there was a lot of that going on. So I don't believe he helped sales if this was some sort of calculated plot.
Yeah. In one hand, you could say it might not help sales in terms of folks who know boxing, because they'll say, well, this guy just seems like he's out of it. And Haney is so laser focused, so technical. It's almost like the exact opposite. So, you know, taking it seriously, you could say in that way. And therefore, you could say, oh, it's a mismatch. But in terms of the erratic behavior and trolling, things like that, maybe there's an argument that will reach mainstream fans or sports fans, because they'll see it like on TMZ or, you know, mentioning like Kylie Jenner's name, things like that. And maybe they'll see this news and say, oh, there's a fight going on, maybe I'll watch it. We don't really know. But so to your point, it's really in the middle. And we do need to give a shout out to Kieran Mulvaney, and that's great analysis by Kieran, because to his point there, it's not necessarily, oh, you have mental health challenges, and that doesn't mean you can't also perform or even perform at a top level or a high level. And sometimes, you know, like, for example, you could look at the Kanye West. A lot of people have said he's having mental health issues, seeing it in public on real time on social media, but then he's still making music. Right. And so, it's just the whole nuanced, discussion about mental health, which I think it's good that we're having that discussion. And so I, you know, a lot of different factors at play, and it gets even more interesting and another layer deeper when we talk about betting. I'm going to ask you about the bet in a second, but before we do, I want to ask you one more thing about the fight itself.
Sure.
Harvey Dock, the referee. And I think a lot of people had a lot to say about Harvey Dock, the referee. He's a veteran referee. We've seen him in a lot of big fights before. There were some interesting moments. And I think I've always said being a referee in the sport of boxing, especially at a high level, is a very difficult job. And it's easy for a lot of us at home to sit there and criticize. But at certain points, there are times where criticism may be necessary. And I want to get your thoughts. So and just to give context to what happened, there were certain times where Ryan Garcia had Haney hurt, and Haney was maybe excessively holding. You can take a point off for excessively holding. That's a judgment call by the referee. There was the late hit that Ryan Garcia did have when they were tied up and the referee was trying to pull them apart. And Ryan Garcia did hit Haney with a hard shot. He took a point off. Now, that is, again, that's a subjective thing, so you could argue that. And so there was a lot of different things that came together. I would say the one clip that I've seen circulating on social media about Harvey Duck, it actually looked like he was doing his job correctly, at least in that one clip that I saw, which was that Ryan Garcia, when you knock a fighter down, you do have to go to the neutral corner. It is the referee's job to kind of keep looking at you to make sure you're going back, and also look at the knockdown referee and then pick up the count from there. And it looked like in that moment, he did that correctly. Overall, what do you think about Harvey Dock's performance as the referee in this fight?
I certainly didn't think he had his best night, but I also would not be overly critical or say that he appeared to be preferring one fight, one fighter over the other, favoring one fighter over the other. I didn't see it as anything egregious. I think the point penalty that he gave Ryan Garcia for that hit on the break was jumping the gun a little bit. That was a situation that called for a warning, a stern warning. I don't think on a first offense like that the point penalty was warranted. Now, that didn't end up mattering. The fact that he took the time to give him the warning may have been critical in helping Devin Haney get through the round. So it impacted the fight that way. But I would say that was the right thing to do anyways, to buy Devin Haney a little time by warning Ryan Garcia that you can't do that. There was holding both ways. Garcia was holding a lot early in the fight, sort of smothering his own offense at times, even, I would say. Haney was holding a lot when hurt, but I think most referees will give a fighter more leeway when they're holding for that specific reason. I don't know that he necessarily needed to have a point taken away. It was a difficult fight to officiate. There was a lot of holding. I think it's the one thing that there was a lot of immediate declaration that this was the fight of the year so far. And it was a great fight. It was thrilling. When you watch it back, there was a lot of ugly holding throughout the fight. That, let's not forget about that Raymond Ford Kolmatov fight a couple months ago. That may still be the fight of the year over this. It's a debate, but certainly from an aesthetic perspective, all the holding hurts this one a little bit. But that's kind of not the key point here. I would say I don't think in the end that Harvey Dock really influenced the outcome one way or the other. The right guy won. I didn't have a problem with the draw scorecard, by the way. I could see getting to that. But in the end, that fight's over. You want a sort of a satisfying result that reflects what you saw in the ring. Majority decision for Ryan Garcia feels about right.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you look at, okay, you could say, well, one guy knocked the other guy down three times. He should win that fight. We all know, people who watch boxing, that boxing is scored round by round. So that obviously is a huge advantage. But then again, we mentioned Ryan Garcia lost a point. So that's one point taken away from him for the hit that was during the hold. And he did hit him late, but then that is up to the referee. The one thing I think you could think about with Harvey Dock is, and again, this is a judgment call. And if you're a referee, you have to make these calls in real time. So it's tough. Mm-hmm. But Haney is holding to such a degree that there was a couple slips that were called. Right. Harvey Dock called them slips, but if you are holding to the point where you're falling over and your knees are touching the canvas because of punches that caused you to fall over and hold to that degree, that could maybe be called a knockdown versus a slip. So many 50-50 moments, but to your point, the story, the end of the day, it was a close fight even with everything that happened. Ryan Garcia won, and you know, I think everyone is good with that outcome, especially when he did knock down his man three times. And it was so shocking. It was also so shocking because of everything that came into this fight. And so that leads us to the concept of the bet that I want to talk to you about. And the reports were that Ryan Garcia bet $2 million on himself and was paid out $12 million. And the odds were that wide because for anyone who doesn't know, the reason odds are set where they are, it's not necessarily what's going to happen in the fight, but it's what the odds makers are saying. This is a fair line to get action on both sides. And so when it's perceived that a fighter, let's say, has erratic behavior or isn't training, then the odds makers know that that's what the public is going to think. And that's going to make them not want to bet on that fighter unless the odds are good enough for them to do that. And that's why the odds were what they were. So that opens up an entire can of worms, though, because a fighter like Ryan Garcia, we'll just use him for example, because we're talking about that fight, could make it seem like he's not right going into fight. Maybe not by trolling, but through social media, but you could make it seem like you're injured or, you know, not too injured to fight, but, you know, coming off of an injury or whatever it is, and get the odds in a certain way and then bet on yourself. And so, or the same thing here, you could make it seem like there's erratic behavior and then bet on yourself to make up for it. Or we know that Ryan Garcia came in 3.2 pounds overweight. And so he had to pay a penalty. The reports were 600,000 plus 2 percentage points in terms of pay-per-view split. So you could say, well, I'm going to just come in overweight and I will make up for the money through my bet. And coming in overweight, maybe we'll even increase the odds even further because it looks like I didn't train. So it opens up the whole can of worms. So what do you think about just that overall concept of fighters? Should they be allowed to bet on themselves? If so, do they need to disclose it? And if they are able to bet on themselves, how does that all play together with this can of worms of the way that actions and things that happen, perception before fights, will play out in terms of swinging those betting odds?
So I guess I'll start at the end, which is the conclusion that I reached in my CasinoReports.com article on this, which is that this situation shines a spotlight on the fact that boxers really should not be allowed to bet on themselves, in my opinion. In most sports, there are central governing bodies, the NBA, MLB, NFL, et cetera, that are setting rules about what the athletes can and can't do with regard to betting. Particularly, these rules have been developed since sports betting became legalized in states outside Nevada after 2018. So as it spread, the leagues have adapted to it and created rules that generally, in most of these sports, it's you can't bet on your sport at all. If you play in the NFL, you cannot bet on NFL games, or you are going to get a year suspension, or and kind of depends what the exact infraction is. Boxing does not have a central governing body, as we know. There are sanctioning groups. Their authority is limited. There are individual state commissions. There's the Association of Boxing Commissions that generally, I guess I would say, is the closest thing that we have in the U.S. to bringing all these groups together. But none of them have any rules specifically outlawing boxers betting on themselves. So it becomes up to the sports books to some extent to determine what they'll allow. In Nevada, famously, we know because Floyd Mayweather often bet on himself, we know that boxers are allowed to bet on themselves. But we also learned when Mayweather fought Conor McGregor and wanted to bet on himself to win by knockout and wanted to bet under 9.5 rounds in the fight, that those bets were rejected. And that so basically the takeaway is a boxer can bet on himself, but only straight up to win. No props. There's too much room for manipulation. The problem is there's also room for manipulation, even when you're betting straight up on yourself, as Ryan Garcia claims he did. Again, we still don't know that he did this. He claims he was trolling us for the last couple months. He could be trolling about this bet too, or he could be not trolling about everything else, but making this up. Who knows? He did say he bet $2 million to return $12 million. And the problem is that this comes back to the infamous Pete Rose example, which I misunderstood for a very long time. I always thought when Pete Rose got busted for betting on baseball, that if he said, oh, I never bet against my team, I only bet on the Reds to win, I never bet against them, that made sense to me. Okay, he's betting on his team to win. What I didn't understand at the time was you'd have to bet your team to win every single game the exact same amounts, have that consistency for there not to be possible manipulation, because you could not bet on your team one night, not do such a good job coaching them and help them lose. That helps get you wider odds the next night, and then you bet on them. And so the same thing here with boxing. If you're betting on yourself, okay, in theory, that sounds good. You believe in yourself to win and you're putting money on it. But if you didn't bet on yourself in your previous fight and you look like crap in that fight, how do we know that you weren't doing that to drive up your odds for the next fight? And in this, and it ties in specifically to the Garcia thing, because people were reaching the conclusion that if indeed he bet $2 million on himself, he inflated his price with his behavior, intentional or not, leading up to the fight. And it just makes for an incredibly messy situation. Now, the odds didn't move that much, but they moved a little. Haney, I think I remembered seeing him open as like a minus 650 favorite and Garcia around plus 400, 4-1 on your money. I saw Haney eventually get as high as minus 1,000 at some books, which the football player, former football player, LaShawn McCoy, admitted that he bet on Haney $250,000 to win $25,000 and lost it. So when the odds got to their widest, he made a really bad bet. And Garcia, in theory, if we can take him at his word, made a great bet at a great price, 5-1 on himself. But it is just a really messy situation that I think whatever the powers that be are in boxing, those powers that be need to get a handle on this and start making it clear that no, boxers, their camp, their family, et cetera, cannot bet on the fights they're involved in.
And that's the tricky part. And I'm curious to your perspective. You said that overall, you don't feel like boxers should be able to bet on themselves. And I'm curious now, if there was a way, now it'd be hard to enforce this, but if there was a way for if a boxer did want to bet on himself, if that was fully disclosed to not only his opponent, but to everyone watching, because would you then be in support of that? And the reason I ask is because we're talking about Floyd Mayweather, let's say you said betting on the under 9.5 rounds, let's say. If you know that that's, you know, what he's doing, then you can tail that. All that information is there. The opponent knows that. They're going to adjust based on that. There's a million different things that come with that. Or, for example, I've interviewed Keith Thurman in the past. I believe it was for his fight versus Pacquiao. He said that he bet on the first round knockout because the odds were so good. So he said he was going to go for that first round knockout. And so that seems like, if information that maybe the betting public should also know in terms of what that fighter is thinking about, and if they put money on this certain outcome, maybe if it's all out in the open and disclosed, you know, maybe that's something that works. Now, that's a whole nother, like we said, that's we don't, in terms of that transparency, we're not sure exactly how that would happen. But would you be in favor of that, the disclosure of a bet on yourself?
I don't think it's enough, but I think it's better than boxers being able to bet on themselves and it all be in the dark until after the fight or never come out at all. And the other thing to clarify here is that for all we know, boxers are betting on themselves all the time using unregulated systems. And that may have been the case with Garcia. I highly doubt that if he made a $2 million bet that it happened at a regulated U.S. sports book like a DraftKings or a FanDuel or any of those. I think if indeed he got that money down, that it's possible it would have been in person at a Las Vegas casino. That's a little more possible to get a bet that big in, but still seems highly unlikely. More likely it's some sort of offshore sports book or done with a bookie. These unregulated markets that unless Ryan Garcia tells us himself, I bet on myself, we never know. So the disclosure, I think, would be better than nothing. But I think it's nevertheless, it's just problematic to have boxers betting on the fights that they're involved in any way. But yes, for the rest of the betting public, at least, if we know Keith Thurman bet on himself to win by first round knockout, at least we have the same information that he does and that the sports books do, and it's an even playing field. So I'd say that's better than nothing, but it's still, I just think for the good of the integrity of the sport, which is questionable enough to begin with, we don't need to open up additional integrity concerns about boxing by letting boxers be placing bets on their fights.
You mentioned that, and at the end of the article, you said that you don't believe Ryan Garcia was faking any of his issues, and you're not convinced he actually bet on this fight. So what gives you that thought process that, you know, this $2 million bet never really happened? Why did you land on that with everything that you've heard and learned about this fight and the betting aspect of it afterwards?
So what I'm more inclined to rule out for sure, as I said, is that he placed the bet at some sort of regulated online sportsbook, just because they tend to have such low limits. To get a $2 million bet down would go up a whole chain of command to it to accept that bet. And once they find out it's the boxer, or if he wasn't placing it himself, it was someone connected to him. If they get any kind of wind of that, I feel like they're going to reject that bet 100 times out of 100. So I'm just about 100% certainly ruling out that possibility. But I can't say for certain that he didn't play. It's the fact that the only suggestion we have he placed this bet is him telling us he placed this bet. I'd love to see some sort of receipt, some sort of ticket that he shows that, or you know, an online screen grab from his account showing it would would suggest it's real, or some sports book, even if it's an illegal offshore sports book, saying, yes, Ryan Garcia bet with us. And you would think that they would want to advertise that. Whenever a sports book loses big, they like to advertise that because it gets more customers coming there and thinking that they can win big. So the fact that I've seen no evidence beyond Ryan Garcia saying he made the bet is why I'm leaning very heavily toward he didn't actually make the bet for $2 million. But I don't know for certain. That's just me speculating, same as with his mental health. It's just me speculating that he was not trolling us, but only he knows.
Only he knows. And you mentioned that posting the ticket, and fighters have done that. Floyd Mayweather, a lot of the time, will post a ticket for a bet that he's made. So fighters have done that. And so, you know, that will be seen. We're talking about the integrity of betting. And so I just wanted to ask you too, as someone who covers betting, as a betting expert, things like that, we're talking about the integrity of all of this. So let's just say that the sanctioning bodies and the powers that be came together and had a way to enforce that fighters don't bet on themselves. What would stop a fighter from giving his buddy some cash and telling him to go bet on him? Because, and actually there have been people, I believe I saw an article recently about a fighter who a report came up that, hey, you know, there were some interesting bets that came in for a certain round, things like that. And so the people were kind of getting aware of this, that some, you know, activity that didn't seem, that didn't seem to follow a normal pattern there. But besides that, what would really stop a fighter from having someone else bet on their behalf?
It's a great question, and it is absolutely a hard thing to nail down. I think the fighter you're talking about, it was a fight in Florida recently that drew some suspicion, and there's an investigation ongoing, perhaps. And I believe in Ontario, they've stopped allowing certain bets as a result of that. But we've seen in other sports, athletes getting caught having other people bet for them or betting through proxies. There were some there was a college football player who I believe he wasn't 21. So there's an account opened in one of his parents' names and they placed the bet for him or something. And he got in all sorts of trouble for having broken the NCAA's rules about betting. There have been situations where associates of people have gotten caught because they're too close to the situation. There was an MMA fight where this was a year or two ago. A guy came in with an injury and money came flying in on the under and the first round knockout loss and all of that stuff. And that's exactly how it went down. And then they sort of backtracked it and saw that someone connected to his trainer had bet against him because they had that inside information. So in the regulated market, there are companies that specialize in investigating these things and the integrity of the betting and all that. They do ferret out some of this. They're not catching all of it. There's no question that athletes are breaking the betting rules in their sports, whether, you know, having a proxy, a friend bet for them, even innocently sometimes telling a friend, man, I'm running a fever today. And their friend takes that information and bets against their team. There's all sorts of ways it can be manipulated and it's impossible to catch it all. But I guess I would just say if boxing puts penalties in place, if there's some sort of rule, we find out that you bet on yourself, you're suspended from boxing for 3 years or something. As long as there is that threat out there, at least the boxer is going to think twice about, is this worth it? If they're the red carpet's being rolled out, yep, bet on yourself. We're fine with that. Then there's nothing to even discourage the behavior.
We saw it in the NBA with Porter being banned for life from the NBA because of betting, and you know, people looked into where those bets were coming from and all of that. So that does happen. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays itself out going forward in boxing, and so we will have to see. So just to close it out, going back to the fight for a second, we saw what Ryan Garcia did. Certainly, you know, on the top of the boxing world right now in terms of just everything that he did, with how bizarre leading up to this was, and then getting all those knockdowns against a fighter who had never been hurt before, like Devin Haney. Devin Haney, you know, we don't know if he took this as seriously as he did. He seemed like he was training and he was on weight. He was doing everything that he normally does in his preparation. So it's hard to really know. Maybe he just, you know, wasn't prepared the way he needed to be for the left hook. We're not sure. So just to close it out, where do you think each man goes from here? What do you think will happen next? And, you know, what does the future hold for both Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney?
Obviously Ryan Garcia has lots of options right now. It starts with him figuring out what weight he can make and wants to make. And we didn't really get into this in the fight, but the advantage that he bought himself with those extra pounds was also a significant factor in the outcome. But so, you know, he weighed 143.2 for this. Can he make 140? If so, I think a rematch with Devin Haney is certainly interesting and marketable. I think suddenly, shockingly, a rematch with Tank Davis becomes extremely marketable. They apparently sold 1.2 million pay-per-views the first time, and Tank won fairly convincingly. And so there seemed to be no reason for a rematch. But if Garcia can make 140 and promises to do so, I think a lot of people will talk themselves into the rematch possibly being different. And that's just two superstars, young superstars in the sport, and extremely marketable fight. But then there's just, should Garcia move up to welterweight, because that's what's better for his body right now? I had noted in my Boxing Scene article that the toughest fight he could possibly take would be trying to get a fight with Terrence Bud Crawford, and maybe that's not wise in certain ways, but it's kind of a no lose. You lose to Bud Crawford, no big deal. Nobody holds it against you. If you beat Bud Crawford, you just punched your ticket to the Hall of Fame. So, you know, he's got a lot of options. And I think a lot of people should be rightly concerned, though, about his mental state. And there should be sort of a, let's make sure this guy is okay. Maybe he is. Again, maybe it's all trolling. I don't think so. You want him to do what's best for his long-term health above all, but certainly as a boxer, he's on top of the world right now, as you said, and can really call the shots. Haney is in that tough position of, he was the less marketable fighter coming in. It was his undefeated record and that helped attract opponents and get him opportunities like this. He doesn't have that anymore. He does still have his belt because Ryan was overweight, so Haney still has the belt to defend. I'm sure this is, you know, he'll have more big fights, but he does not call the shots right now. And I'm just curious, excited to see how these 140-pound young stars are going to continue to mix and match, because we do have this brewing rivalry of Haney, Garcia, Tank Davis. And then you also have Shakur Stevenson. You still have Lomachenko hanging around. You have Teofimo Lopez, who's the lineal champ at 140, and nobody's even talking about him right now. There's just so many interesting ways these guys can mix and match. And so I think I'm hoping that what we saw in the last year with Garcia fighting Davis and then Haney is the start of more and more of these guys taking each other on straight up.
That's what we want to see at the end of the day, right? The best fighting the best. It seems like, you know, maybe this is a gateway for that to happen, because, and I believe after the fight, Ryan Garcia said he can't make 140 anymore, so he's going to go up to 147. And I believe they offered the Tank fight at 145 catchweight. Who knows if Tank would do that? But so many different options for Ryan Garcia. Sugar Sean O'Malley, like a crossover fight, you know, MMA boxing kind of thing would be interesting. Right. I know they're talking about that. They mentioned Conor Benn. There's so many people that are calling out Ryan Garcia now. And like you said, right, for Devin Haney, a lot of options, and I'm sure that he's going to be back, especially at a top level. I think a rematch would be really interesting as well. Maybe they do the rematch at 147 pounds at some point down the line. Either way, I think it was a really fascinating night of boxing. I think one great takeaway is that there were so many eyeballs on a big fight, a big event, for whatever reason you want to call it, most of all the caliber of the fighters, also everything else that played into it, but a fight that delivered in terms of excitement and entertainment. And that's what we love to see, you know, and we got to see that with Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia. So we'll see what happens next. Eric Raskin, I want to thank you so much for the time. Thanks for breaking it down. I always appreciate your perspective, and I'm glad that you got to enjoy the fights, and I'll hope to chat with you again soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Curran. It's always good talking to you.
I am Curran Bhatia, chatting with Rajan Picasso Chance. Rajan, it's a pleasure to speak with you, and I want to talk a little bit about your most recent fight, but I also want to talk a little bit about your boxing journey and everything else. First of all, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, doing good, getting mentally better, mentally prepared for the world, I should say. And what I can say is ready to get back in there now that I got all of the dramas and dramatics out the way. So yeah, I'm doing pretty good now.
So, and let's talk about, for people who may not know, you had a fight recently, April 6th. That was against Trayvon Lawson. That was at Mohegan Sun. And I was calling that fight. So coming into that fight, you were 8-0-1 with six knockouts. You're only 23 years old. You're fighting at 122 pounds. You've had spectacular performances up to this point. And you ended up getting a split decision loss in that fight. I personally did not agree with that. I was calling the fight. I thought you won almost every round. And so I want to talk to you about that fight. But first of all, you know, there may be people listening to this podcast when it gets posted who are not necessarily familiar with you and your story and who you are, because you are making your name still. You are a prospect. So for anyone who doesn't know, I know you're representing East Orange, New Jersey. You know, give a little bit of a background about yourself as a fighter.
Myself as a fighter, Picasso is the perfect name because my fighting style, one, it can be very awkward. That's one. It can be very aggressive. That's two. And it can be just a classy performance as well. And as far as like my outcome with my fighting style, it also comes with a lot of pain. Like what I go through in life and what people don't see. You know what I'm saying? So me being from East Orange is good. I live in a good part of East Orange now. But before, me and my brothers used to couldn't like go outside in Arlington and all that other stuff. We used to just play and stuff just to stay out of trouble. Like my parents made sure that we were out of trouble. Not going, but we were kids that like, oh, don't fuck with those motherfuckers. They don't got it all. We were kids that was basically, me and my brothers was kids that was basically like, oh, we outside. Oh, mommy and daddy not around. You know what I'm saying? That was just us. But overall, East Orange was a place that made us and made us to who we are because of the support system and how everybody is more so impressed that we're kids that's trying to make it out. You get what I'm saying? Even with us still living in a good part of East Orange or whatever, we're still kids trying to make it out, be better, be great. And even with the game banging and stuff that goes on like out here, they don't bother us. They actually support us as well because it's like, oh, nah, those kids. Y'all don't mess with them. They're gonna be great. So it's cool. It's actually people that pushes us, I should say.
And you started boxing at age seven. And I know your dad took you to the gym. You fell in love with it. And I know you've had your dad in your corner as well. Sometimes in fights, you'll hear your dad say an instruction and you'll verbally say, "Okay, dad," and you'll follow through with what he's telling you to do. And you mentioned the nickname Picasso. When I first asked you about it, you said, "I'm an artist in the ring." And I noticed that in your fighting style as well, because you are very creative in a lot of things you do, offense, defense, things that you don't normally see in the ring. So you're trying to add a fresh perspective to it. So tell me a little bit about that. Tell me about your relationship with your dad and how he got you into boxing, and then also how all of that developed into your unique style that you bring into the ring.
My relationship with my dad is good. Good relationship. I'm gonna have to say he's the person that will tweak some things in like my head, like that y'all wouldn't really know because it's just like a cold, like or the way he looked. It's like, oh, he mad. Let me go fix it. Go fuck him up. You know what I mean? That's just what we. That's just what me and my brothers are immune to. And what we adapt to. Like for example, my brother Emmanuel. He's the baby. He's the on the USA team, 14-time national champ. He's on a streak right now with the USA boxing. So he had a fight. He was in the he was fighting a kid, one of his friends, and they fighting. Now after the round was over, everybody had, you know, they now you can see the scorecards on the USA Boxing when the rounds is over. Round was over, the kid won the round, but it's like the kid is not on Manny level, and my dad knew that, so he never spoke to my brother. He just looked at him with eyes. My brother was like, all right, tightened up his headgear and stopped the kid the next round. And he took over the whole tournament and became a 14-time national champion. So that just goes to show the kind of training that we had been through and the kind of mental that he put on us. You get what I'm saying? So having my dad around is also good because he tweaks stuff in us that we need for a fight.
And you've had your dad in your corner, like you said, and obviously his instructions are very helpful to you. And I think that just shows about where you're at as a fighter, only 23 years old, but you have the awareness to almost have this dialogue or look at your dad and even make tweaks that way. And that shows of where your skill level is at. That's something that is developed because you started boxing at the age of seven, right? Because you have that muscle memory, because you can think that way in the ring at such a high level, that high ring IQ. So that's a testament to your story. So, you know, we were talking about your fighting record. The last time we saw you before this previous fight was in March of 2023. You were fighting in White Eagle Hall in Jersey City. You're from New Jersey, so that was a big opportunity for you. You got the first round TKO win. So
packed.
That place was packed, and the energy. What, before we even talk about this most recent fight, what was it like to headline in Jersey City and have your fans there supporting you?
It was amazing. And the reason why it was so amazing, because it was like, I didn't expect that much people to come. You know what I'm saying? Yes, I know I'm from Jersey. Yes, I know, like, okay, he's Wheezy. You know what I mean? In Jersey, I'm known as Wheezy. So when I go out there on the stage, one of my brothers already, like, told me from backstage, like, yo, you got a crowd out there. They said Shadeja was out there, Shadeja Green, Ian Green, Big Bang, the Chinese guy. And it was NFL players. They said it was a lot. I'm like, that many people came for this show? I'm like, damn. Okay, shit. Let me go. I didn't want to go see, but I wanted to stay focused. So they just told me, yeah, stay in the room. I'm like, all right, cool. So after, when I went out, I was trying to be serious, but I was smiling at the same time. I was like, whoa, I packed the plate. I basically showed, like, oh, okay, this is what he bring to the table when he fight home. You get what I'm saying? So. It was an exciting experience. See, I got the knockout, so it definitely was an exciting experience. Exciting, very exciting.
You got the knockout in the first round TKO. I was calling that fight, and you performed in front of the home crowd, as you said. It was an electric atmosphere. So that all led you to your most recent fight, which, coming into this fight, you were 8-0-1, 6 knockouts. You were taking on Trayvon Lawson, who also was undefeated. Coming into this fight, he was 5-0 with 3 knockouts, but he hadn't fought since 2021. So coming into this fight, what were you expecting from Trayvon Lawson? He hadn't fought in a little bit, but he was also an undefeated opponent. So what was going through your head coming into the fight?
I was still expecting him to come out a little explosive, because at the end of the day, yes, people do not fight, but people train. You know what I'm saying? People train very hard, and I see that he's training hard. I see that, because it's not like I'm a person that's like going to not take a little look at who I'm fighting a little bit. So I see that he's training hard. I see who he trained around. I see he's been posted, because it wasn't like he just fought Angel Barrientos, even though that's the person I was expecting to fight. I was expecting to get pushed back and me going to box, but it turns out I end up pushing him back and doing what I did. But regardless of what, and the simple matter of fact, I expected him to be a little explosive, but I guess not with me. It's just a little different. But he's a fighter that you don't sleep on, I should say. Because at any given time, Trayvon do got a little thump. I mean, even though it went away after the fourth round. I'm not trying to talk shit. Even though it went away after the fourth round. But regardless of what, I expected a great fight and a great opponent because of how he trained. You could not fight in God knows how long and have the best performance of your life. We've seen it with Errol Spence and Danny Garcia. We've seen it with the big Charlo when he came back. He didn't fight for a year and he came back with a great performance. So as long as you stay consistent in the gym and working on your craft, you just wait for your opportunity, get your life together. I feel like anybody can come out on top. So Trayvon Lawson was not to sleep on, even with him be having a 3-year layover and me having a year layover. We both stayed in the gym consistently, and he was still hungry as well. So I didn't sleep on him at all.
He was hungry. You were hungry. You're both undefeated coming into this fight. And I was calling this fight, and myself and my co-commentator, you know, we were taking in everything that you were doing. You were showing a lot of different things. You had a very unique defense. At certain points, you had a lot of really great movement. And from what I remember of the fight, It was a lot of stick and move, throw a combination, get out of the way. And it felt like there was a little bit of frustrating Lawson. To Lawson's credit, he did keep coming. He was trying to, stand on his punches, land some power shots. But you were an elusive target. And at certain times, you were even backing him up. You were trying a bunch of different things in the ring. You were also, like we said, you were taking advice from your dad. We would hear you verbally say, okay, dad, and make adjustments. As you went in the ring. And that's one of the things I really like about watching you as a fighter. It's very fan friendly. You do so many unique things, and it's I think the Picasso nickname is very valid because of that. It really is taking something that people do in a very typical way and adding your own spin on it, which I do really like. Right. So I personally watching this fight, calling this fight, I thought that you were going to be successful in this fight when it went to the scorecards. When the fight went to the scorecards, what was going through your head? Did you think that there was any chance that you would be losing a decision at that time?
All right, excuse my language. Fuck no, because one thing about me and one thing I'm going to get out to the world is I can take a loss. I will smile at a real loss. Like, yeah, he was the better man tonight. Okay, he got me. I'll cry later. Y'all won't see me, but I'll cry later. But what can I say? All right, the example I'm going to give. When I fought Elon De Jesus, we fought twice. The first time we fought, we had a draw. But I'm going to be completely honest with myself. That fight should have not went to no draw. He beat me. He clearly beat me. It was his night that night. I was off. I had a concussion before the fight. It was so much shit with me going on before that fight that it was like, tonight, not my night. It was his night. You know what I'm saying? Which is why the second time, I was young, yes, but the second time I came out, smarter, stronger, and ready to fight. You know what I'm saying? And beat him. But regardless of the matter is, even if we would have fought the second time and he would have won, it would have been like, okay, that was a closer fight. Even though I still edged it out, but it was a closer fight than what me and TJ Lawson had. With TJ Lawson, I don't see where it was like, oh, okay, maybe this is why. I would give a 5-3 on some mercy round, like not on some, okay, give him 3 rounds to make it look good. 7-9 to 79-71 scorecard was perfect. That's what I thought. I'm like, okay. Once I heard that, that's when I'm like, okay. We won the fight. But then I'm looking, I'm like, wait, hold up. Chance didn't come out of his mouth. Did he just say lost? So I was like, okay. I never like really experienced that at the pro level. As an amateur, I did. I used to laugh at it when I fought D. Reagan. It happens. You get what I'm saying? It happens in the amateurs. You get used to it. So you just smile it off. But this is the pro league where your life is on the line. Your career is on the line. It's so much stuff that you sacrifice for this and you make way and you do so much shit for something to be taken away from you. That's the only part I don't like about boxing. You got to be fair because you can fuck up someone's life like that. Like if I wasn't mentally strong or anything, people my age would have been, I quit. I just seen that shit. I'm not doing this shit. I'm not a quitter though, but something like that could fuck up somebody's mental. I had to take a 2-week to relax, to like get my thoughts together, get some sleep. But it is hard, but you just got to come back stronger. There's nothing else you can do. And I guarantee you TJ Lawson will not give me a rematch again. So you just got to bear with the chief.
Hopefully, there is an opportunity to right that wrong and get a rematch. Looking at the scorecards, the first scorecard read 79-73 in your favor. So that means that that judge gave you all but one round. It was an 8-round fight. So that means that judge gave you 7 rounds.
Okay.
And that means you dominated the fight by in that judge's mind. The other two scorecards, though, 77 to 75 for Lawson. And so that means that the judge that was a razor thin on those judges' scorecards, but they gave Lawson the extra round. So the 5-4 kind of thing. With that said, that even right there, you can see a little bit of inconsistency because one judge sees it very dominant one way and then two others see it so differently. It's interesting to see there. And this is nothing against Trayvon Lawson because Lawson is doing what he's supposed to be doing. Absolutely. And fighting the best of his ability. And if Absolutely. A decision goes away, you yes. mentioned being, upset about the loss. And I think there's something really valid to that because it's unfortunate, but there is something in boxing where fighters get looked different when they lose their O. And I don't think they should. I think boxing, you know, should be like UFC or others, absolutely, other sports, where if you get a loss, that's not a big deal. Manny Pacquiao had many losses. Muhammad Ali had many losses. You know, top fighters have had losses. I think the thing that makes this difficult, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it wasn't necessarily like a hard fought fight in your mind where it's like, oh, I lost today. It was a fight that you felt, yeah, you dominated. And, yeah, and there's a difference, right? Is that how you're taking, yes, it?
Yes. Yes. Like I say, like, I'm not one of those kids where it's like, because like I took Trayvon Lawson on, a kid that knocks, that upsets people. It's not, and I took a whole year off. I could have fought a bum. I could have fought, but I didn't want that. You get what I'm saying? I wanted to, all right, let's up it. All right, let's get excited. You know what I'm saying? Let's have a reason to fight. You get what I'm saying? Because with all respect, I know you take every fight serious, but I know my skill level. You get what I'm saying? Not to be cocky, not to be judging other fighters, but I know my skill level. With Trayvon, I knew he was strong. I knew he came to fight. So I was excited, like, oh yeah, it's a fight. It's a fight. I'm going to fight today. You get what I'm saying? That I even told everybody in the locker room, like, yo, I'm excited. That's why I can't stop smiling, because it feels like I'm fighting Elon again. You get what I'm saying? So it was like, let's do it. Let's do this. And then when I got in the ring, the first round was jitters. So I'm like, okay, a little jittery. Second round, it was like, okay, I'm getting a little comfortable. Oh, hit him. There you go. Third round. Then the fourth round came. That's when it's like, I took more risks than I ever took in my whole career so far, especially with a hard-hitting motherfucker like that. So it was like, I took risk. My defense was on point. And when I mean risk, let me tell you something. 8 ounces is no joke, okay? So it's like, okay, let me see what he got. I'm catching punches. I'm firing back. I took punches. I'm firing back. I'm like, oh, I'm okay. I'm here. I'm like, oh, this is me. This is what I'm saying in my head. I'm not going to show everybody, but this is what I'm saying. I did something that I never knew I could do. My head went through the ropes. It came back out. I slipped the punch, hit him, and moved. I've never done that before in a real fight. Sparring is different. But in a real fight with 8 ounce gloves, I ain't never seen my head move that fast through them ropes like that. So it was like, oh, can I do that? I came back in the corner, told my dad, and I looked at him like, and my dad, one thing y'all need to know about my father, he's going to tell me like, yo, you need to pick it up. You need to do this. You need. It was nothing to say. The only thing my dad really wanted me to do was get him out of here, but I played it safe. Like, I played it like, I ain't going to take no risk. He still, like, I hit him with so much hard shit. It was like, nah, he ain't getting out of here, Dad. He's going to stand 10 toes today. He's not getting out of here. And he's a tough fighter. You know what I'm saying? He's in a TCL as we speak. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I know he's not getting my rematch, because I know who he fought. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, whatever. Take it. And getting older now, but I didn't see it more so on the business side. It's like, I'm the A side. I'm signed. I'm this. Even with PBC, when I really lost, they gave me a draw. You know what I'm saying? That, I know how the business go. I know how the politics go. And I'm a man of my word. Elon won that draw. Trayvon didn't win this fight. So it's kind of like, where did I go wrong? Did I say something? Did I do something? Did my family do something to you guys that weigh in? Like, you get what I'm saying? That it makes you think, like, what the fuck did I go wrong at? Like, that's what's going to make somebody question the company and all that other stuff, man.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing your perspective. So the question now, to kind of put a bow on it and all of that, is what do you do now? Where do you go from here? I know that you're going to be back to training. It seems like this is motivating you in a way. And you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, you did have a good performance in there, and it's unfortunate that the scorecards did not dictate that. And that's part of boxing in terms of the subjective nature of it. And at the end of the day, three people's opinion is going to make a big difference in a lot of people's careers and trajectories and things like that. Now, to your point, that doesn't, you said this earlier and I agree, that doesn't mean at all that you can't come back from it and all of that. And I'm sure you will. So the question now is, where do you go from here?
Where I go from here, I don't really want to say what I plan on doing as far as like me fighting yet, because I plan on fighting in July. But with all respect, where I go from here is, one, I'm trying to get relief from star boxing. And this is not to say anything bad about Joe DeGuardia. It's not to say anything bad about the star boxing company, period. I just feel as though, one, I'm not active enough. That's one. Even with my injury or what I had, all that was way before. It was way before like October, because I got injured in camp. I never got injured in camp as in my camp. I got injured in the Shakur Terrence Crawford camp because I was doing a workout and I snapped my ankle. So I had to like take it easy for a little while. So it wasn't like, oh, he couldn't fight because he got injured. I told y'all, told everybody I'll be back. So that happened in October. Doctors told me to take a little week. I even though I didn't listen, but it was starting to affect him. So I had to take a little break. So I told him I'll fight in February. That didn't go through. Told him March. It didn't go through. And the fights that they were getting me, it was like, it don't make sense. I'm not one of those kids where it's like, oh yeah, I want the money. No, I want the legacy. I want to make the smart moves. I want to make the moves that make sense. You don't take no B-side fight if you're not ready. That's one. And you don't take a B-side fight when it comes to this business nowadays, because a B-side fight can fuck your whole career up if it's not for a belt, at least, or it's not for the right reason. So the fights that he was getting me to take, it was like, what are you going for, bro? What, why are we, make a show and let's get our name out there. Or even when I was asking, which was smart, and that was a smart idea. Yes, Ole Duvahan is a doable opponent. He's great. The Pitbull was great for me to fight. It was in-house. You get what I'm saying? So that means there's no excuse if, oh, he was this side. I know Ole would have took the A side because he's star boxing and he got the belt at the time. I'm star boxing and I'm just going for his belt. So it would have been like, he's not busy. He's not showing himself to be champion. He's not, you know what I'm saying? This social media means a lot. You have to say shit. You have to do shit in order to be out there. He's not saying nothing at all. So let me take his belt and let me do his talking. You know what I'm saying? Let me be the one. You know what I'm saying? Let me do this and let me do that. He's not doing anything. Y'all not doing with him anything to him at all. So it will make me feel some type of way, but now you messed all that up with a robbery. You know what I mean? To me, people are supposed to have their fighters protected. You know how many fighters I watched on Top Rank lose and they still won? You know how many fighters I watched lose and they still, just because of the signing thing? You get what I'm saying? Not trying to say that is you have to lose or this and that, you lost. No, I won this fight and I wasn't protected. And I started to like take a sit back and to notice like Joe DeGravio was in the ring with me the first time in March. Why wasn't you in the ring with me this time? You know what I'm saying? So it will make me think and make me go like, you know what? It's cool. I have to take the bullet. I have to eat the bullet. You're not going to help me my appeal. You're not helping me with this. And some kid lost the other day. His promoter is trying to help him with the appeal to get the shit reversed. Why is my promoter not doing that for me? With a person that we came to flew down and the person that's all the way from Alabama and his career is almost over. 34 years fucking old, bro. My young ass beat him. Why are you not being fair to me? So, like I said, with all due respect, thank you for the two fights. I didn't even fight that much time. I'm not in the world rankings. I'm not doing that. You didn't do anything for me. So it's best to release me. No bad blood, no nothing. And that's just that. And I still will wish everybody on the star boxing and the Guardia and everybody the best. All love. But let's just leave on peaceful terms, you know?
And to close it out, finally, I just wanted to ask you, you know, first of all, I appreciate your time on this interview. I wanted to ask you, you talked about growing up in East Orange and everything that you've been through up to this point. And obviously this, in a way, you know, even if we don't agree with the decision, it is a setback no matter what. And I know after the fight, you know, you were visibly upset, which is so understandable. You're at it seems like you're at a better place now and you've spent some time. And so I'm just wondering if anyone's listening to this, if you have any advice for people who are maybe going through a tough time or something doesn't go their way, right? What is your advice on how you can maybe use that to fuel you, maybe, you know, turn a negative into a positive, things that you're doing, and, you know, any advice for someone listening out there who may be going through a tough time on their own?
The advice I would give to anybody that's going through a tough time on their own is that you're going to go through that tough time forever. But the tough time that you have within you, you have to release it some way, somehow, because I don't advise you to sit there and hold it in, because if I was to hold that in forever, I would quit. And you have to mentally tell yourself that if you quit, then everybody's going to look at you as a quitter. And then you're going to have to think to yourself and look at yourself in the mirror that, damn, I really quit. And you could have done this. And you could have pushed through that barrel. You could have got through this obstacle. You know what I'm saying? So my advice to everybody is don't quit. The dreams is not over. You're always going to have a bumpy road. You're always going to have an up and down road. There's no such thing as a motherfucking straight road, because if there's such thing as a straight road, then that means sooner or later there's going to be a crack in that straight road, and then the construction is going to have to fix it. And then you're going to be all broken down and all sad. No, the bumpy road is what's going to make you, and tough times is what's going to make you. And then when you get through that, and when you go to the top, and when you get to the top, you'll just say, wow, and you won't have nothing to regret. So that's what I have to learn. I'm still learning that even with me being this young, and I will be world champion. And that's how that's going to go. And I hope the world can be world champion in life or whatever you do.
It's well said, Rajan. Picasso Chance, I want to thank you so much for the time. Thank you for the words of wisdom there. I have thank no you. Doubt that you're going to continue in your career and be very successful, be world champion one day. I think all the tools are there with everything you're doing. So I wish you best of luck. I look forward to keeping the conversation going as you continue in your career. And thank you for the time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And that brings us to the end. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you to my guests. If you want to follow us, you can follow at @ATE_podcast. That's on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to follow my personal channels, it's at @CurranBhatia on Instagram and Twitter. That's at @CurranBhatia on Instagram and Twitter. Please subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/CurranBhatia. Please check out our show on iTunes, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review. If you want to email the show, it's asktheexpertspod@gmail.com. I am Karan Bhatia, and this was Ask the Experts.
Thank you for listening to Ask the Experts with Karan Bhatia.